Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell and Brad Pollock, we're here for you. You can give us a call at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're here to help you answer your questions on any legal subject. What's on your mind today? We can solve your problem. It's all free. It doesn't matter if it's landlord-tenant. It could be estates. It could be property line disputes, survey issues, divorce, criminal law, constitutional law. We're here to help you. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And you know our website, championsofthepeople.com. That's where our information is, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. We have 6 books. They're all free for you. You can download an e-copy free anytime. If you want a hard copy, you can call us at the studio right here, right now, 303-713-8255, and we'll send you a free copy. So, is it legal to gamble in states online? What about internet gambling? What is the status of this situation? When you delve into this area, the law becomes extremely complicated, extremely fascinating. Fascinating, you can underscore that if you're a student of the law or a student of what happens in this country. Absolutely fascinating. So we have the 10th Amendment. We have the Wire Act. We have the federal statutes. And I think we're going to be able to show you some examples today that's going to really raise your eyebrows. So we start with internet gambling. And there was a famous case recently, Murphy versus the NCAA, that dealt with sports gambling. That changed the landscape. That changed and altered the flavor. So, Brad, let's start with the Murphy case.
Well, you know, I'm going to start with saying that this whole thing about gambling is very, very difficult to figure out what's going on, what's not going on at a different time, and what is gambling and what isn't gambling. We now have a lot of sports betting, or we have a lot of fantasy football that somehow does not come in within the area of gambling, supposedly. But it's very, very, very difficult to figure out what's happening. When we deal with the Murphy case, we're dealing with a case where the courts were trying to determine or there was a challenge to a 1992 federal law, the Professional and the Amateur Sports Protection Act, which barred states from passing legislation to legalize sports betting. And this goes back to the 10th Amendment, which says, in essence, that any power that's not specifically granted to the federal government or specifically taken away from the states in the Constitution remains with the states. And for those of you who remember your history, this was a big, big area back in the days, you know. And Gary, I won't even get into electoral colleges and why we have that, but we talked about states' rights versus the federal rights, and why would a state join a federal government if the state has to give up all its rights, and what rights remain with the states, and how do you protect a minority state from a majority state, and a big state from a small state, and how do you do all this stuff? And so, you know, you're faced with a situation that there was a large amount of questioning as to whether or not the 10th Amendment was being violated when you have courts that start talking about and the federal government starts trying to enforce gambling laws that the federal government has passed that a state may not pass. And whether or not the PAPSA, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, it barred states from passing legislation to legalize sports betting. Well, can you do that? What about the 10th Amendment? What allows you to be able to do it? And in this particular question, the question were they commandeering or taking over the rights of the states to determine what kind of gambling were going to be allowed in the states?
Right. And, you know, that's a very interesting decision, that Murphy versus NCAA. So we got everybody heard about, well, sports gambling is going to be legal. Sports gambling is going to be legal. And so it is all decided within the ambit, the confines of the 10th Amendment. And so whether you're a states' rights person or federal rights person, that doesn't matter. We got to talk about the pure law here and the pure law and everybody falls back on the 10th Amendment, which says, you know, if there's no specifically power granted by the federal government, by the Constitution to the federal government, to the states. The states have the rights. The states are free to do what they want to do. They can't be interfered by the federal government. And of course, there's all kinds of litigation over that. But so in the backdrop of this lottery and this gambling, interstate gambling and gambling in states, you've got the 10th Amendment. In essence, the Murphy case by the United States Supreme Court, basically, when you pull back the curtains and go through the smoke, basically says the states can pass laws to authorize gambling on sports. And there's a lot of arguments pro and con, so we don't need to go into that. But that's what can happen. And so then, New Jersey, I think, was the first one. Delaware, New Mexico, Mississippi, West Virginia started passing laws to allow sports betting in their states. So the big question to begin with was, if they do that, if a state passes a law, is that constitutional? Can the federal government strike it down? And the 10th Amendment, the United States Supreme Court said, no, the states are free to do this. So, when you take this law a step further, you got the Wire Act, and you got interstate transmission of funds. You can use your credit card to gamble. You can have an account and deposit to gamble. So gambling is legal in a certain form now, as decided by Murphy versus the United States. What does that mean for Colorado? Well, we haven't really enacted a law. The then Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman issued an opinion, which is a fascinating opinion, because there's a provision and clause in the Colorado Constitution that's called the Anti-Lottery Clause. So now you have the 10th Amendment. Now you have the federal statutes. Now you have the Wire Act, right? Now you have the Colorado Constitution. Now you have states' rights under the Murphy case. They can pass laws to authorize sports gambling. And where does all this end up? And so you might ask yourself, well, what about the status of DraftKings? What about the status of fantasy football leagues? Are those gambling? What about the lottery? Are those gambling? And how does this all work? And so, you've got to separate it out, and I think we're going to give you a shot at it today.
Well, I don't know if we're going to separate it out. Like I said, to me, it's a very confusing area, but we can certainly have a shot at it. The thing is and what you deal with is the major question that keeps coming up is, under what definition are we going to place a certain activity? And if we place that activity under that definition, do we then make it into a game of gambling versus a game of sport? And there's been a lot of questions. Now, it used to be that you come into a pretty simple definition and distinction. If it involved just pure gambling, it was a game of sport. If it was a game of gambling, and therefore it wasn't allowed. But if it required some type of talent, some type of effort, some type of abilities, then it didn't. So the definitions were different as you tried to figure out what gambling was and what gambling wasn't. So if you're in fantasy football and you're putting together a team, and you're having to draft different players, and you're in essence betting on the players, and you're not just betting on a team, and you're having to put the team together. Now, that is a different definition for gambling, or that's not actually gambling, because now this takes a talent, it takes an ability. You have to be able to put together your team, and you're not really allegedly betting. You're instead competing. But on the other hand, if you're just sitting on the sidelines betting on teams and not actually putting the teams together and betting on players, then you're in the gambling realm.
Right.
Very, very weird distinction.
Well, we're going to cover the Colorado law. We're going to cover the Colorado Constitution. What's our status here in Colorado? And can you gamble on anything? And how is it derived? And how do we get there? You can call us anytime on any question at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. And today at 10 o'clock, every Saturday at 10 to 11, 1 hour, the Champions of the People Injury Show, right? If you want to know about hit and run, listen to our show today. If you want to know about what to do at the scene of the accident on a hit and run, listen to our show today. We're going to cover that and other topics. Bell and Pollock, we'll be right back. We never get calls. All right, here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, fasten your seatbelt. We're about to take off the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. We're going to answer your questions. We were talking about gambling in the state of Colorado and the United States and the 10th Amendment. And basically, when you cut back the smoke from the 10th Amendment, it says the states can do, and they have their own powers, unless it's strictly prohibited in the United States Constitution. And wow. You could talk about this all day long and all the issues and the Wire Act and the 10th Amendment and the Anti-Corruption Act and the Racketeering Act and the Telecommunications Act. But let's talk about Colorado just a second, right? So in the Constitution of Colorado, there's an anti-lottery provision of the Constitution. So then Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman said that doesn't apply. She wrote an opinion, Attorney General opinion, that doesn't apply to this gambling issue. But the federal statute does apply. And so then you saw bills being introduced to give the states the rights for sports gaming, and that was the result of the Murphy case versus NCAA. What is legal in Colorado? Is the Colorado lottery legal? Yes. How about horse racing? Yes. Right? How about licensed casinos? Yes. Hi. Why? The Colorado amendment to the Constitution by the popular vote. Join us live right now on KJOW's Faith. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning.
What can we do for you, ma'am?
Well, to try to keep this a little bit short, I had a house built, and in the contingency, we had to sell our house. And with the market dropping, we were unable to get the house sold, and the house was done a little bit early. So they canceled on us, wouldn't extend, and kept $3,000 of our dollars. And I think it was, you know, fair, first of all, that they gave our money back, but because they canceled, can they keep our money?
All right, so you had a house, you were buying a new house to have it built. The new house contract was contingent upon selling your old house?
Yes.
Okay, and then you couldn't do that, right?
Yes.
So that condition or contingency wasn't met in the contract, so then who declared the contract to be done, over with?
They did. They canceled it early before the actual close date. Wouldn't extend, because we did. You know, we wanted the house. We asked, and they said no, and they decided to keep $3,000.
Okay, so they told you we're going to cancel the contract. They told you the time is up, basically, right?
Yes, correct.
But why are they keeping the $3,000?
Correct, why?
Why do they say they're entitled to keep the
$3,000? Oh, just because of all the, you know, I really didn't understand. Just some kind of, they had to keep it because of everything, the work, the probably contracts and things that they had to pull for, the, you know, with the city.
Okay,
I'm not really sure.
You were having the house built.
Yes.
And usually when what happens is the house gets built, when the contractor contracts it, they've got their architectural plans that say this is what we're building. And quite often they'll have contingencies in it. Obviously, you have to sell your other house, but they'll also say if you make changes to the architectural plans or to the building, those changes are going to have change orders, what we're going to charge you for, and those are not refundable even if your contingency doesn't go through. Is that by any chance what happened, or am I just...
There weren't really any changes when it was being built, but I couldn't really understand why he was keeping the money, and he just said that there's a lot of things that they go through, and I'm gathering that that's what he was trying to say.
Well, Faith, you know, that doesn't cut it. There's a lot of things we go through. That doesn't cut it legally, okay?
Well, sure.
What the heck is that?
He gets to sell the house at a later time. He can collect his money. I mean, you know what? I don't even understand this. I would have to see the contract, but I don't understand why he's keeping your $3,000.
Well, I don't either. You know, as my grandfather used to say, you can't sell a horse and keep the horse and the money.
Right.
Right? You just can't do that. Okay, so in my opinion, we got to look at your contract. We'd be glad to do it because it's driven, the answer to your question is driven by the terms and language and conditions of the written contract.
Yes.
For instance, if the contract says, well, you're going to give us a non-refundable deposit, or if you're going to give us a deposit and we have the right to be paid upon, you know, the plans and that sort of thing, that's different. If the contract is silent and doesn't say any of that, that's in your favor. So you have all the contract documents, right, Faith?
Absolutely.
Well, we'll be glad to look at them for you.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
How do I do that?
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do for you, Miss Faith. We're going to put you on hold. You're going to tell Kevin your number here. We're going to get that information from you. We're going to call you, and we'll make arrangements to get the firm, the documents to our firm, or you can even come in, doesn't matter. And we will get you the answer and help you.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Ms. Faith, thanks for calling. I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
Hey, have a great day.
All right, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. There's not another show like this one. We're glad to do it for you, the community, right? Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Join us live now from Denver. Steve, good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
I've got a question about the IEC, the Independent Ethics Commission.
Right.
There was an article in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle, February 2019. It says a judge blocks the IEC. And what it is, it's these rug merchants want to build a high-rise on Carlisle Boulevard in Virginia. But the city council hasn't given them a permit because they would have to scrap its master plan and zoning code to allow it.
Well,
so my question is, what? I've never heard of it. I guess it's IEC. They're trying to figure out who has jurisdiction. And the guy, company, Mac Investment Group, they've hired public relations firm. They've held marches and protests and had threats issued against the mayor and city council of Glendale. Then they said the FBI unsuccessfully attempted to bribe various city officials. The undercover FBI agent Charles Johnson was arrested in Glendale after harassing Glendale officials and citizens who had spoken out against this high-rise project.
Right. So then what is your question for us?
What is this Independent Ethics Commission, and can it overrule a judge's decision?
Okay, so let's start here. The Independent Ethics Commission is created by the Constitution of Colorado, and it's charged with implementation enforcement of certain provisions, right, in the Colorado Constitution. So that's the enabling document. We always talk like that as lawyers. Well, how did this come about? What's the genesis? What's the beginning? What's the enabling document? So the Ethics Commission was constitutionally created. So then what are their legitimate powers? So first we figure out, are they constitutional? Are they legitimate? Are they authorized? Yes, they are. What are they authorized to do? Is there going to be a broad interpretation of what they're authorized to do? Or is there going to be a narrow interpretation of what they're authorized to do? And then you just raised a good question. Can they overrule a court? Can they overrule or can they implement the policies against cities? So the constitutional question is, there's a body that has certain powers, and so how are their powers separated out?
Right, and this comes down to a very complicated situation, but we talk about whether a city is a home rule city. And if a city is a home rule city and has declared itself to be a home rule city and therefore has its own internal powers, then the Ethics Commission probably does not have any kind of power or authority over the home rule city. And Glendale, I believe, is a home rule city. And because they're a home rule city, the Judge Bronfen, I believe it was, stated that there was no there's no jurisdiction over, and I think it was Mike Donovan, who was the mayor, I believe, of Glendale, and said there was no jurisdiction over him to be telling him how he was supposed to be dealing with this battle. You know, this Persian rug organization or group has been very, very much in the news over whether or not the city could have, when its master plan, taken over that Persian rug and put in a master plan, little internal city within the city, of amusements and activities. The Persian rug group wouldn't sell, and they were able to defeat the ability of the city to take over their property, and it's been quite a struggle there. But as far as the Ethics Committee, I don't think the commission there, I don't think they're able to get in there and take control over what's happening in Glendale. Does that make sense to you?
Kind of, sort of.
Well, so it's complicated. So the Independent Ethics Commission, was created by the Colorado Constitution, Ethics and Government. And when you look at it, it basically says that it's important to you look into the conduct of public officers, members of the General Assembly, local government officials, etc., government employees. And they need to instill in us, the people, the respect and confidence that we understand and trust that they're going to, that they're doing the right thing. So they, you know, the act says they will carry out the duties for the benefit of the people in Colorado, and they will avoid conduct that's in violation of the public trust. So you can see all kinds of permutations from those words and how they can be litigated. And any effort to realize personal financial gain through public office other than compensation provided by law. So representatives couldn't have personal gain. The governor couldn't have personal gain and that sort of thing. So they can issue advisory opinions. They can also issue penalties, but they're not going to be able to overturn a court. They're not going to be able to tell. So suppose they find you. All right, they say you were doing something wrong. They find you can take it to court. And what are you going to do? You're going to challenge it. How are you going to challenge it? You might challenge it by saying they don't have the authority to begin this under the Enabling Act, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we got more to talk to you about. Can you hang with us over the break?
Hang on.
All right, Steve, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. They're very knowledgeable in real estate matters. And if you didn't know, there are new amendments to the Colorado Real Estate Form contract, very important amendments. These gentlemen can help you. They can help you if a buyer, if you have a buyer's question. They can help you if you have a seller's question. That's the show that follows our show, Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. Ooh, I love that one I just read. You can't have financial gain from public office. No. No. Huh? On my credit card. All right, come on, here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. 303-713-8255, right? Right before the break, we were talking to Steve. And Steve, I just want to make a couple of final comments, and then we gotta move on. All right, you know, so you get into all these legal arguments, and you see how it can work. So you've got the Independent Ethics Commission. They're authorized by the Colorado Constitution. And then you've got the home rule city, so who can tell who what to do? And then if you want to be a really creative lawyer, you can go to the home rule statute and look at their powers. That's Title 35, Article, 30, 35, 103. What difference does that make? Who cares? Well, here's why we care. A good creative lawyer might argue that we look at the powers of the home rule city, and they define the powers, and so they can't go out those powers. And if the powers aren't defined and identified specifically in the statute, the enabling statute, if they're not defined specifically, right, they don't have them. And so the Independent Ethics Commission say that's not defined specifically. We can tell you what to do. And so I think it all gets decided in court.
Okay.
Plus, I think the Independent Ethics Commission charter even exempts home rule cities.
Yeah.
I think it does. Established under Article 24 or 29.
As they used to say in L.A. law, here come the lawyers. Hey,
well,
Steve.
I've got a way better picture now.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We are here for you, and right now we are here for Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how are you guys this morning?
Doing well.
Perfect. How are you?
Okay, I got the ultimate tricky one for you, and here we go.
All right.
Had a mild heart attack at work. Go through everything. So then the company is so adamant. They say, oh, when you get out of the hospital, we need you to go to the work comp doctor. Go to the work comp doctor. He looks at me and says, oh, you can go back to work the next day. I'm like, no, I got to do some rehab with this thing before I can come back. Then it was like pulling teeth. You know, I had to get letters from other doctors to say, hey, he can't go back to work yet. So it was more or less I felt like I got manipulated by the company so they could be off the hook on this. They just wanted to cover themselves.
Okay, so you want, your question is, what, you know, what's your status, what you can do, what's the law in this whole situation? I think,
yeah,
I hope.
I felt like I got manipulated because they were so adamant saying, oh, you need to go to this work comp doctor. We, you know, you have to go see this person. They were so adamant.
Okay, Mark, number one, you're going to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You're going to download our e-copy of our book on workers' compensation and the 20 traps workers can fall into or be pushed into or shoved into in a workers' comp situation. And if you want a hard copy, we'll send it to you. You can just tell Kevin. But the answer to your question is it's fairly easy in the law. It's hard to implement. If you have a job where you have, quote, unusual exertion, that's the word. Those are the key words. Unusual exertion, then it can be job-related, and then you can go into the work comp system, okay? So if you're in the work comp system, they will send you to a work comp doctor. This is a medical doctor who, you know, has professional obligations, but they have their eye on that insurance company that hired them. So yes, heart attacks can be part of a work comp if there's unusual exertion. What are a couple of examples that's happened in Colorado? One example is a principal in Southern Colorado, when a snowstorm was up on the roof, shoveling snow, and had a heart attack. And they challenged that wasn't related to the job, was it? Was not. It was as held it was related. Another one was a fire chief that slumped over on a fire call, died right in the truck of a heart attack. Was that unusual exertion? So that's the litigation field right there. Another one is the manual unloading and stacking of bags of cement.
Yeah, but
yeah, you know,
I think you think you got to contact us off the air, because we got to talk to you about how to get a different doctor.
Absolutely, gentlemen.
Isn't your problem that you're not liking the doctor, and you're saying think the doctor is giving you a problem?
I just felt I got manipulated because they were so, like I said, adamant. You need to see this guy. They just wanted to be off the hook, because the minute this happened, the next day I get an email from my work email. There was a work comp claim, but they wanted to be off the hook on this, and I already got the denial letter.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold your horses. What denial letter?
Well, they already said they're denying the claim.
When did they say this?
A week ago, I got the letter.
Okay. We got to help you.
Let's take your name and number. We got to call you.
It's a race, but we can help you, okay?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information. We'll contact you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Bell and Pollock, you can call us, 303-713-8255. We're going to talk to Bill from Aurora. Good morning, Bill.
Yes, I had a house in Washington State that was foreclosed on, and I was wondering what's the chances of being charged with a deficiency judgment?
Okay, so it was foreclosed on. You were not making mortgage payments, right?
Well, I couldn't.
You couldn't. Okay.
How long ago did it happen?
Right. Modification period, but it was still too much because of, well, actually the original loan was really it was the Countrywide loan, which is kind of a corrupt company, and they said it was worth a lot more than it was, so I borrowed too much money. And it was just got a high interest rate that could never get down because of the way the credit scoring works.
How long ago did the foreclosure
occur? Yeah, you can have a bunch of small disputes because, you know, and they don't have to take you to court even if they don't do anything.
Right, but how long ago was it, Bill?
It was last December.
Okay, so have you heard anything from them? Was that when the foreclosure sale occurred?
It was it was in November, I guess. It's November 16th.
Is that when the foreclosure sale occurred?
Yes.
Did the did Countrywide take it, or did somebody come in and buy it?
Oh well, Countrywide got
the property.
Basically got destroyed by lawsuits after all their crookedness, and it was assigned to Bank of America, then it went from Bank of America to another.
But did the entity holding the mortgage get the property?
They kept it, yeah.
Okay, your chances are good that there's not a deficiency, but we'll have to look at it off the air, and we'll get your name and number. We can talk to you about that, but there's a good chance that you're going to be okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, the thing that's worried me is I got a 1099 form that was basically a relinquishment of properties form, and it said that you're not supposed to file it with your return, and you just ignore it unless you get it the second 1099, which was for a forgiveness of the loan. So
that's a very interesting. That's a very interesting. I'm so sorry for this for you. So that's an interesting legal issue. You know, can they issue a 1099 because you saved money because you didn't have to pay your mortgage off? So I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information, okay?
Okay.
And we'll be glad to get in touch with you. Thank you for the call. Also, Bill, there's another Bill on the line. You can give Kevin your information. And Jane, if you can give Kevin your information, we will also talk to you and solve your problem during the week. Bell and Pollock, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Website, championsofthepeople.com. Today at 10 o'clock, every Saturday, 10 o'clock to 11, the one-hour Champions of the People injury show. We cover hit and runs today. We cover medical record attacks by insurance companies, right? We cover myths in this business, like surely there must be some kind of insurance company that's going to pay me. I was rear-ended. Our website, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people.